Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's episode 62 of Game On with Cody and John.
This is Game On with Cody and John, the uncommon podcast for the common gamer, bringing you the latest and greatest from the world of tabletop gaming, board games, card games, RPGs, and miniatures wargaming, news and discussions on gaming and gamer culture, plus reviews of some of the best games on the market. And now, from the Game On Studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, here are Cody Jones and John Richard.
Well, howdy gamers, it is Game On with Cody and John. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. It's been a great week in the gaming capital of the world. Cody, how you doing?
Doing great. It's a sunny and 72 here.
Not for long, though. I hear there's a cold front coming through.
There always is.
All of you in the northern areas, the Scott Nicholsons in Syracuse and the D6 Generation New Hampshire, leave your snow out of the gaming capital.
That's right.
It's not going to happen. But we've got a great spring. Convention season is kind of in full swing already because we've had some local conventions, and we've got a lot of great stuff to talk about. Cody, what's our main topic for this show?
Well, there have been a lot of deck-building games since Dominion first burst on the scene, and we're going to pose the question, have we kind of reached critical mass with deck building games? How much is too much?
Exactly. And to that end, we're going to be doing a review of the newest hotness in deck building games, and that is Nightfall from AEG, hot off the presses. I think that's just now in your stores at this point. So have a full review of that and might have a couple of surprises coming up. Who knows? All right. So, hey, ready to get into the rundown?
Let's do it. All right, we're going to kick things off with the rundown where we tell you what we've been playing, what we've been doing, and all that good stuff. We've had a pretty busy gaming last couple weeks. So,
pretty busy.
John, what have you been up to?
All right, so most of my gaming has fallen into two events that have happened recently, one of those being the Game On Game Night, which we had the third one of those. Another great turnout, had, I think like 23 people show up.
Excellent.
So folks are sticking. That's good, you know.
Very good.
We even got a sheet of paper around for a Google group for the group, so everybody be able to communicate a little bit better and set up games ahead of time. So that's going real well. I had a chance to play Mansions of Madness, and this is one that I sort of set up ahead of time. I even the night before cracked open my copy of the game, and as we mentioned in our last episode where we did the review, it takes a little bit to set the game up, you know, and you've got to put those cards in the right order and seed them in the rooms right. So what I did is I went down the list and picked my choices as the keeper, put all the cards in order, and then I basically stacked them up into a stack that was exactly in order, threw it into a Ziploc bag, and then took that to the game night.
Yeah, so, a lot of prep work, a lot of double checking needed to have a great keeper experience.
Yes, and it's interesting that you mentioned that about double checking. Played the game with Jeremy Salinas, who, you know, we wanted to say again, we had a great time having Jeremy on the show, and I think a lot of you listeners enjoyed it too, because we've had huge, crazy download numbers for that last episode of the show. So we really hope that he's able to maybe drop by some other time. So yeah, I played with Jeremy and Greg and Chris and Sean, all those names.
And the rest.
And those other guys. So played as the keeper and got all the rooms right. Everything was right as far as what I had in there. We played the game. I think everybody really enjoyed it. Jeremy brought some of his really awesome painted miniatures.
Oh, yeah.
If you've seen the Drakenstrike video for Mansions of Madness, he's got some amazingly professionally painted miniatures. Played with some of those. And got to almost the end of the game, and at some point the objective card is revealed.
Sure.
And I had the objective card in front of me, and my objective was basically to wait out the clock until we got to the end of the event deck, and then I would win the game. And so I turned over the objective card, and I read the flavor text on it, and then I realized that the flavor text that was on the objective card didn't seem to really match any of the clues that the investigators had found, and the other guys who hadn't played before, they just kind of went, oh, okay. Jeremy gave me this look like, something's wrong here. And something was, in fact, wrong. I had been playing with the wrong objective card the entire game.
Well done.
No claps for that. That's terrible. But this is like the worst mistake you can make in the game, because basically meant that I was doing the wrong thing the entire game.
Yeah, it breaks the ending.
It breaks the ending. And you know, my win conditions, which I'm supposed to know as the keeper from the very beginning, I knew I was doing the wrong thing. And so it ended up that what I was supposed to be doing, I had to now that everybody knew what the objectives were, I had to try to very quickly accomplish those tasks. And it ended up in this very almost comical ending where I had one maniac monster stuck in a room because they took a bookshelf and barricaded me into the room. And then they basically stood in the room and just waited for the clock to turn.
Was there yakety sax playing as they were running in and out of rooms and down hallways?
It really felt that way. Yeah. And I had like the weakest maniac. And so the three turns in a row, he tries to get through the barrier. And there's, you know, the combat cards, it's got like monster versus barrier. And so the first one was like, he bounces off the wall, off the barrier. Oh, great. Nothing happens. Anyone takes a damage or something like that. The second one was he pounds on the wall, but he can't get through. You know, nothing happens. The third one was he breaks through the barrier and the splinters impale him and he takes 2 damage, which killed him.
Fantastic.
So if you can think of thematically, all of the investigators are standing there in the room, the maniac's on this side of the door going, wah! And then he breaks through the door and then promptly falls over and dies. And so like the investigators are like, oh, I guess our work's done here. Let's head home. Let's get some Sonic on the way home.
See, obviously they needed the Cody Jones experience for their keeper.
They did. They didn't need the John Rich experience. Oh my gosh. So they were all very good sports about it. I think they still enjoyed the game. But it was made for a very strange ending.
Disappointing.
I know. I'll get it better next time. So played that. Played. Still a great game. Can't recommend that one enough. Oh, yeah. I want to get that one to the table many, many more times. So only had time for just one game after that. The game took only about 2.5 hours.
Yeah, that's not too bad.
Yeah, that was with setup and everything, so it was fine. And played a quick game of Roll Through the Ages.
Mm-hmm.
With Chris and Sean, and almost squeaked out a victory on that one. I was down by 1 point, but Sean got the victory on that one. So I had a great time at the game night. Also, I guess the other big event that we've had this week or so ago was Who's Your Con?
Who is your con?
Now, if you've listened to Game On with Cody and John for any amount of time, well, at least for a year, you'll know that we go to Who's Your Con every year. It's run by the Hoosier Gamers, which is a group that we've been involved with in the past, and it was kind of originally born out of a Gen Con group that where Cody and I originally met. And so it's a great convention. It's a free convention, which is, I think, one of the main features of it, that a lot of conventions of its size, you know, you're going to have to go in and pay a pretty good price to be able to play all weekend. They are able to cover the costs of this whole thing, as far as I know from talking with some of the leadership, through donations and through rooms in the hotel, right?
Yeah.
Is that how it works?
Yeah, they I'm not sure completely how the back end works, but I know that, you know, that they get, you know, basically the conference rooms for free if they sell enough of their block, and every year they go above and beyond their block costs. I think this year we had over a quarter of the hotel was gamers.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
A lot of folks that come for Pathfinder Society events and for
RPGA.
Is it still called RPGA?
Yeah. I mean, Living Forgotten Realms, but it's under the banner of the RPGA. A lot of the organized play events, they'll travel from all over neighboring states. So, yeah.
They had a vendor hall this year, which they had one last year as well, but it was much bigger this year with some cool vendors. They had a whole room just for miniatures wargaming and different kind of miniatures games. They had a huge HeroScape map. They were doing the Star Wars miniatures Battle of Hoth with the giant AT-ATs.
Yeah, it was great.
Very, very cool. And
we say AT-ATs around here, sir.
Is it? Is it not AT-ATs?
I don't know. I say AT-AT.
My 8-year-old son says AT-AT.
All terrain armored transport.
That's fine. Yes. And so lots of other kinds of games.
If we're going to mention the miniatures game hall, there was a couple guys from, I believe, the Kokomo board game group, Kokomo, Indiana board game group.
Okay.
And each day they set up a game of Twilight Imperium with all the fixins, and they ran it twice.
My goodness.
And, you know, it was, you know, like a 10, 12-hour slot. And it always looked like they were going, you know, I expected to go in there and just see it kind of abandoned you know, they'd give them, they stuck with it.
Wow.
That's one of those games. You know, we tried it kind of one time, but, you know, our timing wasn't great. We had a lot of new people. That's one where, you know, I'd like either just one of us or both of us to get in on a game where everyone else knows how to play.
Yeah.
And we kind of learn it, because that's still one I feel like I just need to do. I need to play a full game, even if I never play it again, just to say, I did it. I got the achievement, you know, for Twilight Imperium.
Yeah, no, I think that'd be a really good idea. I have a copy of it. I guess we just need someone who can teach it to us really well. So anyway, yeah, came in on Friday evening. Didn't stay in the hotel for this time. Just didn't really have the money to get that taken care of.
You know, you're not that far.
Yeah, I live like a half an hour away, so it's not that big of a deal. Played some board games on Friday night. Actually ran into listener Jesse Hickel and his wife, Sarah Ellen, which was a very nice surprise. I wasn't sure that they were coming, but it was good to finally meet them. I think Jesse's been a longtime listener mm-hmm. of the show. And so got a chance to play some games with him and played Innovation. Mm-hmm. Played that with Jesse and Sarah Ellen and actually Chris Hahn, a friend of the show. And I hadn't played Innovation in quite a while, and it's a great game. You know,
I forgot about it. I got in a few games of that as well. I won my very first game ever, and that was big.
I think I won this game, yeah. And it was the only thing that I think is kind of a downside of that game as I'm playing it more is that unless you're playing, even if you're playing with people that know all the rules.
Mm-hmm.
You still find that you have to read all this text.
Yeah.
You know, like you, all the dogma actions, you have to read, you know, I tuck a card and do this and I give this to you. So it's just a lot of reading the cards. And mm-hmm. it's not like you can say, I've got the engineering card and everybody knows what that does. It's not like, you know, like Magic the Gathering, you know, I've got a Sarah Angel. Okay, I know what that does. But
4/4 Flying Vigilance.
There you go. See?
Yeah. Three colors, two white.
Thank you for proving my point there. But for Innovation, I don't think you're ever going to get to that point. I think you're pretty much always going to have to be reading the cards a lot.
So. I still think it works best as a two-player game. Not to say that Innovation and Seven Wonders would fit in the same Jones Theory bucket. I think they're different enough. But honestly, for four people, I'd rather play Seven Wonders.
I think you're probably right. Yeah. But still a really good game. Enjoyed that mm-hmm. one. And then Cody had been playing in some stuff, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But he had come back in with Kaylin and some other folks. And we split off into two tables. And Cody played Cargo Noir. You can talk about that in a second. And then I played... I'm going to tell you what you can talk about.
Thank you.
And then... me and Kaylin and Jesse and Sarah Ellen played Survive. Escape from Atlantis. And that was a really, really great game. Had a lot of fun with that one. And Okay, so that was Friday. And then on Saturday, I was supposed to play in a War Machine event. And I was a little bit nervous about it, like, maybe I won't show up to it. I'm not real good at tournament-style War Machine.
I chickened out.
Yeah, yeah. You were signed up for it too, that's right. Yeah. But I went in and just grabbed my bag of stuff and showed up. And let me tell you that the guys that were running this scenario, it's like a local group that's, you know, the press gangers and stuff like that. Some of the nicest guys I've ever encountered in gaming and very, very helpful. These are the kind of guys that help the hobby go forward and help people get into things like miniatures wargaming. You know, because, you know, you go to that game store and you've got your stuff, maybe you got your first little army and you're nervous about it or whatever. The worst thing that can happen is to have some guy be a jerk mm-hmm. and, you know, pretend like he knows all the rules and just, you know, completely smash you. You know, these guys were just, they were there to answer every single question. The scenario was very cool. It was called The Wall. And they literally built this giant piece of terrain.
It was huge. I checked it out. Yeah,
and you either could, you know, attack the wall or defend the wall. And if you defended the wall, you could either be right in front of the wall or you could be up on top of it. If you're up on top, you couldn't jump down, and vice versa, you couldn't get up. And then the goal of the person who's attacking the wall is to tear down the wall. The wall was basically a armor 12 wall with a whole, with 120 boxes. And so you basically were trying to get up there and just, you know, mow through the wall. And there wasn't like any specific location. Like if you're, you know, any part of the wall is, you know, is within your range, then you're there.
So here's my question.
Go ahead.
If you're on top of the wall, you know, based on the size of this thing that I saw, wouldn't you be out of range for everything?
They measured the range from the base of the wall.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I mean, that was a little bit abstracted just to make it work. But
yeah, because I'm thinking, you know, if I had my Widowmakers up there, you know, they've got a good range. I still wouldn't be able to.
Yeah, because the wall is a good 12 to 14 inches tall. Yeah. And so no, that you would actually just draw a line straight down from where your model is to the base of the wall and then measure it out from there.
And so that would work both ways. So like a ground unit could shoot at someone on the wall, but they would just target kind of.
I guess you could, but what I found was in my forces, the guy I played with, he had a couple of jacks on the ground, and then everything else was up high. Mm-hmm. And I was just—it's a timed event. It was an hour timed event, and I think they were kind of playtesting it for what they want to do at Gen Con. But you know, you win if you tear the whole wall down, and you got some special sort of achievement or bonus if you tore down at least half the wall. And so I just sort of found that I had to focus so much on getting to the wall and attacking it that I wasn't really paying much attention to what was going on up there. So I'm not sure how that would have worked as far as if you were attacking.
I guess I'm trying to figure out, other than like separating units for AoEs, what the point of having people on the wall versus on the ground is if you just measure from the ground for everything.
Yeah, that's a good question. I've got a copy of the scenario. I have to let you
know. Have to look
but,
it up.
But it was very cool. It's just very different from just a normal, you know, go at each other and kill each other sort of thing. So I really enjoyed that, even though I did lose. but I got through half the wall, so
well done.
That was pretty good. So played in that scenario, and then our buddy Brian had shown up with his War Machine stuff, and so we just found a table and played a game of that, and he smashed me pretty good with his Krix.
Dirty, dirty
nasty,
Krix.
Nasty army there.
See, they're even more insidious because they're not painted, or the ones that are painted, he bought painted, and they're like secondhand painted. It's not like painted figs quality, you know. They're all like mismatched, and I'm like, come on, man.
Yeah. It's well, and a friend of ours had shown up with her nice camera, and she's like, oh, can I take a picture of your game? Because I really love these War Machine models, and I'm like, well, I bet you I know which one she's taking a picture of. It's mine because they're nicely painted. But that didn't help me at all as far as winning or losing the game.
You know. While we're on the miniatures topic, I'm gonna. Veer off for a second.
Do it.
War Machine, we're actually trying to bring it back a little bit in our circle. It's fallen off a little bit. We just haven't had the opportunity to bring it to the table.
Right.
So, I had listened to the D6G's episode on scenario building. I'm actually working on a little scenario.
Nice.
Yeah, well, we'll see how it goes. But we're trying to get that back to the table, and John and I are entering our second miniatures game. We're putting our toe in the water, as it were.
Yes.
We're going to try Dystopian Wars, the kind of steampunk naval combat game.
This was not my idea.
Yeah, this was my idea.
I want that to be clear to all listeners. This was not my idea.
I got snookered because those dirty SOBs of the D6 generation. I listened to their episode on that, and just seeing the pictures of, you know, the steampunk ships on the blue felt. You know, tabletops. Yes. Oh, come on. So we're going to try it out. You know, we're just getting the starter and then, you know, paint it up and see there. But we're branching out.
Yeah.
Well-rounded gamer, remember.
Well, yes. And if you remember, I think I said that I was okay with having a couple of, armies for a couple of different miniatures games.
Yeah. I mean, we're not going to go out and have, 100-point War Machine army and a bajillion-point Warhammer and then an epic army. You know, we're still board gamers first, I would say.
I would say.
Yeah, but minis gaming is no longer that dark corner of the store, and we really want to explore that. So be looking for that if you like miniatures games. If not, be dreading that.
Be ready to fast forward through those sections.
But I will be trying out the Kingdom of Britannia, and John will be the...
Is it the Kingdom of the Blazing... Kingdom or something like that? Empire of the Blazing Sun or something like that?
I almost said House of the Rising Sun.
No. the sort of, Japanese force so... Yeah, so that's going to be pretty fun, I think. I'm looking forward to painting them because I think the painting the metallics is going to be kind of cool for dry brushing and that kind of stuff.
So that is the end of the aside.
Sorry. That's fine. So after the War Machine game, I basically had just a little bit of time to grab some lunch before I ran my one big game of the con, which was running a game of Sid Meier's Civilization, the new version. And so I ended up getting four players, and so I taught the game and just sort of ran it rather than playing in it, which I think worked out good.
It's best, I think, if you don't mind teaching, which I think for a con game, unless you put, experience required and you're running a hardcore game, you're not there to play. You're there to kind of share it.
And answer questions and things like that. And so I had some very patient players because I wasn't as well-versed on the Civilization rules as...
they're meaty.
Yeah, as I probably should have been. But had a couple of listeners come up and talk to me that played in the game, and so that was really cool to have them there. And ended up being a really good game and ran about 4 hours and 45 minutes with the rules explanation. So
still,
it was
still not terrible.
Yeah, it's one of those games where I think you only have to play it once to really get the rules down, and then once you have that, then I think
a refresher will help, just like a quick 10-minute thing.
Yeah, but I think you can get that game played in 3 hours or less.
Yeah,
if you really work at it.
And things like this are what I think is the great thing about HoosierCon, because we talked about last episode IndieCon the week before that John went to, and basically from what I've heard about that, the two are very different. IndieCon is very much like the boardroom, or very much like BGGCon. You set up, you have everyone there is pretty experienced. With conventions like HoosierCon, it's nice because you know, both John and I believe that it's nice to bring out a game like Civilization or Descent and share it, because that will probably be some people's only chance to ever play something like that. You know,
right.
They may not have a game group, or the game group they have may not ever be into something like that. So the fact that they get to play something like that, that's pretty cool. And you see a lot of happy folks that it's like, wow, I would have never had a chance to play this.
Yeah, and I think that if I had the rules to Mansions of Madness down a little bit better, if I had known that was going to be released and so forth when they had the events, I probably would have run that, because I think that would have been another one that would have done well as a con game. So enjoyed that game. I got to play sort of at the end because our buddy Scott ended up having to go and start a different game, and so I've sort of finished out him getting crushed, more or less.
Well done.
I completely changed his strategy. He was going for, I think he might have been heading for a technology or maybe a military victory, and I just veered him off into economic victory, which meant that I was a little bit behind. But it ended up being a really great game, so. Played that, and that was the majority of things that I played at Hoosier. Kind of some other stuff with Cody, which he'll talk about in a second. And one final thing I wanted to mention is I got to play a game, a long shot, with listener Brendan Mayhew, who just sort of sought me out and found me while I was talking to some of the leaders there, and just wanted to play a game. And so he was starting that one up. Had a real fun time playing that one. I forgot how much fun that one is.
Oh, that's a good one.
Especially with a large one. We only played with four players, but it was still a lot of fun. So, Brendan, thanks so much for... finding me and playing a game. So all right. So I've talked enough. HoosierCon and game night were a lot of fun. So, Cody, you
gracious.
Go.
Oh, that's good. I know. It's so good to have a turn.
I'm going
to
take a sip of my ski here.
Oh, please.
I've got this fine. Have you ever, listeners, you know ski? It's this lemon and orange soda. It's from the hills of southern Indiana.
Yeah, our buddy Greg, his family is down in the southern part of Indiana, and they don't sell this drink here, and so he brings it up in just truckloads.
It's like smuggling. It's funny. So. No, it's very good. It's so I'm going to drink a little ski, and you can talk about your games.
Thanks for that. This episode of Cody and John brought to you by Ski.
No.
All right. In no particular order here, because that's how I roll.
Yeah.
I've gotten a few games of Wrath of Ashardal onto the table, or as Russ Wakelin would put it, Wrath of Ashardal or... Ashardalon, anything but Ashardalon.
You're dropping a lot of D6G references.
I am. I am. I've been. I'm in a position at work now where I'm listening to podcasts more often, so I've kind of gone on a marathon there.
Great podcast. If you haven't heard it, thed6generation.com.
Yeah.
Okay, plug
check
it over.
If you got 4.5 hours to burn, that's the way to do it. But anyway, got Wrath to the table several times. Really enjoying it. I'm finding, though, that my tolerance for cooperative games is going just down and down and down.
Oh,
now,
really?
Now it's like Wrath of Ashardalon, games like that, I can kind of, it's more D&D like, but any other co-ops I've played lately, I've just been bristling at it, because I rarely play in what I consider a successful co-op game where either, one person isn't trying to run the show. Or, well, I guess that's it. One person trying to, I don't know.
That's what I was going to ask. Is it the game or is it the people?
It's the people.
It's the people. Okay.
And usually, and I'm not trying to be like, oh, it's these damn people that I have to play with. Because 50% of the time, I'm that guy. And I try so hard not to be, but there toward the end of the game when, everything is hinging on the next few moves, I'm always that guy. I'm like, okay, when it's your turn, you should do this, and your turn to do that. And I know when people do that to me, I hate that.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm just... I don't know where that happy medium is, besides chiming in for the well-being of the group and kind of running the show.
Mm-hmm.
So I've just been really frustrated with co-ops in general lately. But Wrath has been nice. We've tried a few different dungeons, and it's definitely a step up from Ravenloft, though. Though if you hated Ravenloft, Wrath's not going to change anything. You got a chance to play it.
Yeah, I like it. Time. I think it's pretty cool. It is different from... Ravenloft, different enough, especially with the chambers and some of the little tweaks in it that, it feels like a different experience, but I think it's a good system. I mean, I think it really, you can sort of think of it as a system rather than just a game, and I really like it. I think it's easy. It's just easy to set up and play.
Yeah.
I think that you just, we got together and you said to the couple of us that gathered, hey, want to play Wrath of Ashardalon? Okay, yeah, cool. And then within 10, 15 minutes, we were playing. You can't do that with Descent.
Nope.
You can't just say, let's play Descent and, be up and running in 15 minutes. So
bye-bye, Descent.
It's looking that way.
Yeah.
Kevin Wilson, don't cry. It's okay. We still love you, man. He did Civ.
Let's see. Other games played. I mentioned Innovation with you.
Yes.
Also got Seven Wonders to the table a few times at HoosierCon. I like it more and more each time I play. It's, it's climbing remarkably fast.
You're you got it on order, right? The new printing.
Yep, got the second printing with sleeves. I'm not a sleeve guy, but
I've
seen the cards kind of get deteriorated pretty quick.
Oh, the copy they had at IndieCon was well worn. Let me tell you,
cards ripped in half,
almost
crumpled. You know, let's see. I got a chance to play get the Resistance to the table. Before running Werewolf, actually, Kayla and I ran Werewolf both nights at HoosierCon, and I think Resistance is pulling into the lead. I mean, you know, there's room for both since they obviously accommodate different player sizes, but. Man, the Resistance just gets, you get some really good discussions going, whereas Werewolf kind of can be same old after a while.
Yeah.
And I've not even tried any of the expansion plot cards with Resistance. So I'd like to play with some regulars of that, you know, get a group and then see where that goes. But Resistance, such a great game.
Nice.
Also at HoosierCon, I ran Action Castle. And the other variants.
This is great.
This is the Parsley games that are based on Zork, and you know it's like you are in a cottage. There's a fishing pole here. Exits are out, or you know east, south, and so there's these modules put out by a company called Memento Mori Theatrics, and basically you can run it. You run it as a group event, and I was the computer. And the rest of the people were collectively the player. And so they would just take turns in the circle issuing orders to the computer. And as the computer, you're supposed to be very literal and even kind of snarky because that's how those games were, you know. Like if you have a fishing pole and you say, you know, cast pole, it's like, I don't know how to cast that, you know. Like a spell, get it? So I ran a couple of different ones. And as the guy running it, I had kind of mixed feelings on it. Because I think I first played one during Andy Looney's event where he had written his own and it was really, really good, Parsley Muffins. And I kind of feel that's how you have to do it because, you know, I knew these scenarios pretty well. I still had to check some things, but I think it would just be better if, you know, it was my own creation.
Oh, okay.
I felt like people had a good time and people seemed to enjoy themselves. But
do you think it'd be hard to write one of those?
I don't know. I think it would be tricky, you know. Yeah. I'd honestly like to see, like, you know, how Andy Looney did it, but, you know, he's not going to divulge that. But so I might try it. I don't know. I mean, it gets kind of tedious if the group is stuck and they're just going back and forth between, like, three rooms. And you're just, because as the computer, you give the exact same room description every single time.
That's what I was going to say. That is the part of it that makes it feel like you are really in that computer game kind of environment.
Right.
And what makes it really funny. And that's actually what makes you, Cody, really good at this, because you're really good at keeping, like, the deadpan. Mm-hmm. You were in the forest. Yeah, exits are southeast, east. You know, you can't go that way. You were in the forest. It's really, really funny just to hear it over and over again.
Yeah, so I might give that a whirl. We'll see. Let's see what else. Oh, so John mentioned Cargo Noir.
I did.
I game shared this from the wonderful people at Myriad Games, which we'll give proper penance to later.
Indeed.
And I, for HoosierCon weekend, I probably got in 4 or 5 games of it. I really, you know, it's Days of Wonder. I really wanted to give it the test. I think I played, it plays 2 to 5. I think I played it 2 to 5.
Wow.
And I have to say my final thoughts on it is just kind of ho-hum. I was not that impressed.
Okay.
It's an okay kind of, you know, not to give too much of an explanation of it, but it's essentially just a worker placement game.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very basic, like even more basic than I would say Stone Age or anything like that. It is the entry level thing. And for that, it's great. The components are great. The art's great. The theme, pretty tacked on.
Yeah, very, very tacked on.
Yeah, and it just, you know, it seemed by like turn 6 of every game, I was just kind of clock watching.
Oh.
It's just very, just ho-hum, and it was fine. I ended up sending it back. It's actually one of the few Days of Wonder games I don't own.
Ooh.
Yeah, it didn't make the cut.
See, you and I played a two-player game with this one, and I liked it. And I just wonder if it's just an audience thing, you know. I mean, you and I are, we're dyed-in-the-wool gamers, but, you know, we've played all kinds of stuff. And so, you know, sitting down and playing Ticket to Ride, for example, I like Ticket to Ride, and I'll still play it. But that's never going to be my very first choice for something to play.
It's not for us.
It's not for us. And I don't think Cargo Noir is really for us either. I think it really shows Days of Wonder trying to branch into you know, even more gateway style games. You know, you got Ticket to Ride, which is the quintessential gateway card, you know, card play, set collection, card play, route building, blah, blah, blah game. That was real descriptive. And then you've got Cargo Noir, which I think is really kind of almost a quintessential gateway worker placement game.
Yeah.
You know, that I think that you could really very easily move from that game into something like Pillars of the, not Kalos, but like something like Pillars of the Earth, maybe, or, you know, or
Stone Age
or Alien Frontiers or something like that. That would be a good next step game. But, you know, I think it would appeal to a lot of families and a pretty wide audience. But
it's still really boring.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think even as a family, it's just kind of, okay. You know, I see little tweaks they could have done to punch it up. You know, like they have all these illicit goods, but the rarities are all the same.
Oh, uh-huh.
You know, it's like, yeah, as the game progresses, certain things will be harder to get. But, you know, out of the box, there's the same amount of everything. It's just very vanilla. It wasn't a bad game. You know, it's not like I was playing Thunderstone. But, you know, at the end of the game, I was just kind of like, well, okay, that was fine.
I heard another review say that it would be really cool if they had tied in the idea that since it's smuggling, it'd be really cool to have like an element of the law. You know, kind of event card or some kind of a thing that has to happen, at, you know, where you get boarded by a Coast Guard officer or something like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, so you really felt more like there was more at stake here than just collecting your stuff and trading it in. Like there was more of a risk factor there. So, yeah.
So
that would be cool.
As far as Days of Wonder go, I'd say it's one of their weaker efforts, but it's still not a bad game.
No,
it's not a bad game. It's just a boring game, I think.
It's fine.
It's fine. It's bland, yeah. But
okay.
Okay, to wrap up, let's see. I got the Ice Dice preview/upgrade kit from Looney Lab.
The Looney Pyramid addiction continues for Cody.
That's right. Looney Pyramids are kind of, they're going away from the Treehouse tube model to they're going to be, I'm not entirely sure exactly how they're doing it, but I know they're going to be selling this game Ice Dice, which is essentially two stashes of pyramids, you know, essentially think two sets of Treehouse. And it's a real basic kind of push your luck game.
And kind of like it's almost the Bananagrams bag.
Yeah, you know? it's in this pyramid kind of bag. It's
pyramid shaped.
Yeah.
Bag.
Yeah. Although I'm clutching my tubes, and I even bought some extra empty ones before they go out of it because that's the way to store them. I can't throw them all in a bag.
That's
barbaric.
You're a civilized man.
That's right. But John and I got a chance to play Ice Dice watching the Butler Bulldogs pull out a victory.
That was an amazing game.
At the bar. Ice Dice was fine. It's
a little push your luck dice game.
It's cute.
And
the pyramids add a nice touch to it.
Yeah, and really the fact that we played the game at the bar at a restaurant, that's exactly the right setting for it, you know.
Yeah,
it was pulled it out while we were waiting for our food and, you know, played through it, and it was nice.
Yeah, and something to note on the Looney Pyramids is that they're getting them made in China now. They got a new mold set up, and the pictures look
scandalous. Made in China.
Yeah,
what?
I think they finally
had to. Well, I'm sure they were so popular now they had to.
Yeah,
production needs.
But they're selling off all of their old sets now. There's not that much difference between the pyramids. You can mix the old and the new. The new ones they look a little cleaner, the edges and everything. It looks pretty nice. But you can, if you go on LooneyLabs.com, you can get pyramids at a great price while they last. And so if you've been thinking about it, you know, just want to get a few extra ones to try the different games out, I would definitely recommend it. Do it quickly because they are selling out. Because there's some great games. There's some not great games.
But there are some good ones in there.
And finally, John and I got to play the Rivals for Catan from Mayfair Games. We got that to the table. My wife and I also played it, and I was very pleasantly surprised. I kind of looked at it, and, you know, I love Settlers of Catan. It's a great game. But I always kind of, you know, raise my eyebrow when it's like Catan the dice game, Catan the drawing game, Catan the deck building, you know,
Catan the role playing game.
Yeah, no, that's next. And so I saw this and I was like, oh yeah, well, we'll see how this goes. But it was a great 2-player game.
Yeah, it's really good.
And it felt like Catan. Like you know, that's something Kaylin and I noticed when we were done. It's like, well, you know, I feel like I played Catan, but obviously you can't play with two people. You know, I would recommend it. Probably plays in half an hour tops.
Yeah. You mind if I mention just a few more details about
the game?
Yeah,
go for it.
Yeah. I got to play this with Cody too, and I thought it was really, really good. And as far as I know, I think that this is I'm not sure if it's a new game, because I think it's a redoing of the Catan card game that's been around for several years, except that now they've really expanded it, and I don't know if they made. I've never played the original Catan card game, so I'm not sure. But they've added in three additional ways to play that are called like the Era of Turmoil and the Era of Gold and the Era of Progress, and so they're these separate decks of cards. You have a basic set. And then you can expand it by playing these different eras. So a lot of replayability and a lot of variety. So I think, you know, like for a husband and wife or for a set of friends that play two-player games a lot, it's a great one that you can pull out and play pretty quickly. You know, the idea being just like it is with Settlers of Catan, that you're trying to sort of expand your territory, building settlements and roads, cities, all the typical kind of Catan stuff. But the way that they handle the resources is interesting, because you start out with one field, which is represented by a card, for each of the different kinds of resources. And around the perimeter of the card is a number of resources, little squares with the symbols in them. And so you start off with one on each of these, and whatever is showing on the bottom of the card, that is the resource that you have. And then as you get more resources, you will turn the card 90 degrees, which will, you know, show a different number of symbols on there. So it's very easy to look at your board and see how many of each resource that you have. So when you spend them, you kind of, we kept calling them taps, saying we're tapping them, you know, like it was magic. And you use those to be able to play things, play cards out of your hand, and to be able to, just like Catan, buy the roads and buy the settlements that you need. Being able to figure out how many victory points that you have is very easy, because there's a victory point symbol on the card, so you can sort of look at your whole, I think it's called a principality in front of you, and you can very easily count up how many victory points that you have. There's a couple other little variations that happen with some dice rolling, and instead of the robber, they have the brigand attack, where if you have more than seven resources, you've got to, you know, discard certain things. So if you like Catan, it feels like Catan, but with two players, and the trading element is a little bit different. And actually, Cody laughed at me because I got the rule wrong initially, because it's a two-player game, so you don't trade with your opponent.
John asked, it's like, so do I trade with you? And I'm like, no.
I'm like, I think I said, oh, I'll trade you. How about one wood for one grain? And you're like, no. You're like, I don't even think you can trade with me. And I look in the rule book, and he's right. So you trade with the trade ratios that you would ordinarily have in Catan. And then you can have different cards and ships and everything that can reduce that trade ratio. So it's a lot of fun.
A very pleasant surprise.
Yes.
Cargo Noir was a very underwhelming experience. This was a very pleasant surprise.
Yep. So a real nice new one from Mayfair Games. I'm not sure if it's, I think it might be on store shelves by now.
I believe it is. Not. So, yes.
But it's a really great game. We'd encourage you to go out and check it out.
Absolutely. That does it for my games.
That's a lot of games.
That's a lot of games. It's a great, great few weeks of gaming.
I think we did pretty good, huh?
Yes. Well, it's time for the Game On Inbox, but before we get to your emails, we want to give our due penance to our friends at Myriad Games.
I know you guys are shocked out there that we're talking about Myriad Games.
Absolutely stunned. Myriad Games sponsors Game On with Cody and John on behalf of friendly professional gaming stores everywhere.
Everywhere.
And we mention it every episode, but their MVP program, the reasons to join just keep growing. You can get access to the game share program. You get great deals. You get to be the first to try whatever's in Dan's crazy mad scientist laboratory that he's cooking up.
Yeah.
So check out the newly designed MyriadGames.com, and you can get the skinny on how to become a Myriad Games MVP.
That was nice.
Thank you.
That was very nice. Kinda
sun down. So now your emails, John.
All right, our first email is from Philip Manoff, and he writes, Cody and John, I really enjoyed listening to your review of Mansions of Madness.
Thank you.
In episode 61. After the review, I put this game on my definite buy list. I wanted to make a correction of an off comment you had about Fantasy Flight Games publishing a game from a designer like Martin Wallace. Fantasy Flight Games actually publishes a game from Mr. Martin Wallace. Runebound is designed by Martin Wallace.
Well, he was the only person to tell us that.
I wish. We definitely got the picture. Several listeners informed us that, yes, indeed, Martin Wallace did design Runebound. I had no idea.
Our bad, yeah.
Yeah, no, that Runebound's one of the first games that you and I played together, I think, and great game, so.
It's a good game.
At the time we played it, I think we said it was a great game. So.
Well, we hadn't played a lot.
Okay. Ooh, ouch. Burn. Yeah, burn to Mr. Wallace.
Sorry, MW.
He said, I wouldn't consider Runebound a typical Wallace design, but he has published several titles that are much different than his typical Euro economic rail game. So keep up the great work. So, Phil, thanks so much for writing us and letting us. Thanks to all of the folks that.
Seriously, thank you.
No, really, we do appreciate it. I feel like we've sort of made it as podcasters when we say something just kind of off the cuff, and then we get 15 emails from people saying, that was wrong.
Yeah, so, you know, it's I'm waiting for Kevin Wilson to do a Fantasy Flight game because I think he's got some good ideas.
Yeah, the Kevin Wilson guy? Yeah. He's pretty good. He should do a Fantasy Flight game. You're just asking for trouble, man.
That's what I do. All right, our next email comes from Mr. Bob Johnson, and he writes, hi there. First off, I'm a huge fan of the show. I guess someone has to be.
Yeah.
I just wanted to suggest
I
just wanted to suggest a topic for discussion or review of one of the games in this category, and that is the space opera. There are big games set in space playing either a ship or a whole civilization. Some examples would be Twilight Imperium, which
we talked about earlier,
or the Phantom League.
I've never heard of that either.
I love space games and would like to hear your thoughts on them. Thanks for everything you do, Bob. You know, this Twilight Imperium, you know, our buddy Dare, he got hooked. He learned the game, and I think the next weekend he got into another game of it.
Oh, gosh.
So maybe I can get in his group and he can teach at least one of us. Because, like I mentioned earlier, that's one I'd definitely like to play at least once.
Now, how do you feel about the space theme in general?
I think it's fine. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, I think that's... Do you have, like... I don't think we've ever talked about this. Do you have, like, a favorite theme or genre that you gravitate towards more than any other?
You know, I don't. It's...
I don't think I do either, but...
Yeah, I mean... You know, whatever fits, but I guess I don't like a poorly applied theme.
Okay.
If the fantasy theme seems like it is applied the best, that's fine. If it's sci-fi, if it's military, whatever. As long as it's not, you know, this is going to be the Cargo Noir whipping episode. If it's not like that, you know, where the theme is just kind of tacked on or any of the Kinesia stuff.
Yeah.
The theme is usually fine by me.
Okay.
But thanks for the email, Bob.
Yeah, I mean, I feel the same way because I don't know. I'm sort of finding that I think I do like, I do like space games. I think more than fantasy games. I think I would pick the science fiction sort of theme over the fantasy theme.
I'd probably pick fantasy games.
Really?
By a nose, yeah.
Yeah, that's not too surprising.
Whoa. You people and your fantasy games.
You people.
Read the next email.
All right. All right. Our next email is from Steve Cotter, and he wrote in with some great suggestions, kind of going along with our previous contest that we had, so we appreciate all those suggestions. And he also had a question. He says... are there any games that you have that you love but never get to play because the people you usually game with hate? Alternately, are there any games which you own, which you hold on to because other people love them but you really don't? He said that for me, the answer to the first has got to be Arena Roma 2. I don't really have one for the second question. Keep up the good work. And he says maybe less editing would mean you could put shows out weekly.
Nope.
I just don't think we could do that. No. But we so
that'd be less time gaming, and we're just the Comic Gamer.
That's the main thing. I mean, I'll go and even address this, is that the reason why we have a bi-weekly podcast is because we usually game on one weeknight, and then the next weeknight, the next week, we record. So it's record, play, record, play, record, play. If we released weekly shows, we would just be recording, and we wouldn't have anything to play. So that's the reason.
Yeah.
What about the other question that he had? Games that you... that you don't like, but that you have in your collection because other people like them.
Well, that's the second part of it.
Okay.
For me, I would say I've got a few like that. Mr. Jack has actually kind of plummeted in my personal standings.
Really?
As a two-player, yeah. My wife really likes it, and I'm just kind of getting to the point where I just really don't care for it, but you know, I can't get rid of it.
Yeah.
I'm blessed to have a gamer wife. I shouldn't complain. What are some other ones? Let's see. Dice Town is actually kind of getting there a little bit.
A game that you hate, but everybody else
I don't
loves.
Hate Dice Town. It's not, I don't know. It seems like that one gets picked a lot. Like,
yeah.
Oh, Dice Town. I'm like, yeah, Dice Town, okay. Fine. You know, whatever.
What about a game that you love, but that everybody that you're around hates?
Ooh, that's tough. A game that I love that everyone hit. I don't know if I have an answer to that right away. I know you probably do because I cut off a lot of your Euro game.
Carcassonne Hunters and Gatherers. Yeah. That's the only version of Carcassonne that I own because it's my favorite version. And everybody that I know hates it. Everybody. I still have it in my collection because I hope for that day when I can actually get it to the table. But it hasn't happened. So, and then as far as things that I...
Oh, I figured I went Looney Pyramid games. A lot of people I know just do not like them, don't even care to play them, so there you go.
You know people like that don't like Looney Pyramid games?
I know a few, yeah.
some are in this room right now.
Maybe.
But as far as things that I don't like that everybody else seems to like, That rarely, for me, that just rarely happens because I'm just usually of the opinion of sitting down and playing any game is better than not playing a game.
Right.
So most of the time. I'm usually amenable to just about anything. Yep. You know, I would say probably maybe the occasional cooperative game that people want to get Pandemic out or something.
Mm.
And I'm just, you know, I fear exactly what you said in the last segment there where we're talking about you get the wrong crowd of people and it's just not any fun. And I just find that finding that right mix of people is rare.
Yeah.
Yeah. So right. Thanks for the email, Steve.
Yeah. We're going to wrap it up with an email from a friend of the show, Magnus Lundgren.
Magnus.
And to summarize a bit, he is not real pleased with the Mansions of Madness rulebook. There is a... he says that we said the game was easy to learn, and he disagrees that the rules are, quote, basically the crappiest ones I've read in a long, long time. he says they're poorly written, poorly organized. There's you know, it comes with the errata cards, and you know, you have to go to BGG for a lot of the questions. You know, I have to agree with you. It's not the rules aren't the best. You know, I think we've just kind of become accustomed to, oh, this is a Fantasy Flight game, and we put those glasses on.
It's true. It's like a different set of standards for rules.
It's like trying to read a, you know, if you try to look at something that's 3D without the glasses, it's really hard to look at. It's like, oh, it's Fantasy Flight.
Let me lower my standards. Yeah, here. Yeah. You know that you need a good evening before you play the game to get through them.
I still think if you can get past the rule, and I know there's certain situations that are really tough to kind of grok when you're just learning. I still think, and I think John would agree, that the core of the game is easier than you think it would be. When you look at the box and you're like, wow, that's going to be a multi-hour, you know, a lot of plastic to it. The rules are going to be really complex. The rules are not that complex.
No.
The rule book is, I would say, not that great.
Sitting down and learning it from the rules, I think, is quite a task.
Yeah.
But once you have learned it and you kind of made it through that, and Magnus, it sounds like if you've already been the keeper once, you've endured that pain, then I think you teaching it to other players is going to be pretty easy. And I found that in the game I played this past week, teaching it to the other players with a few little exceptions, because you know, I didn't learn it from the rule book either. Cody taught me how to play, so you know, that there was just a few things that I had to look up, but you know, in general, it just gets easier over a couple of plays, I think.
Absolutely. So. Well, thanks for the email, Magnus. We appreciate that.
Yeah. So we'll just close the inbox. We always would encourage you to write us. We love to hear from you, and any questions or comments that you have, any GM Academy questions. We haven't had a GM Academy segment in quite a while, but we'd like to do that. Feel free to write us at the Game On Inbox.
That's GameOnInbox@gmail.com.
That's right. Or you can always call the Game On Hotline, where... What was it? What's her name?
Flo.
Again? Flo will be happy to.
Madge. I don't know.
Someone would be happy to take your call. And that is always available to you at 4138 Game On. You know the nighttime now. Party game. Is the right time. Party game. To be. Party game. With the one you love now. Party game. All right. Well, it is time to get into the night. As it were. Oh,
that's right. We're not we're not talking Twilight here, but we are talking Nightfall, the newest deck building game or deck construction game. That's the new. I saw an article on Game Salute where it's like, is it deck building or deck constructing or drafting? It's a deck building game.
Yeah,
that's right. But Nightfall, the newest deck building game from AEG. We've played it. It's out now, and we're going to tell you what we think, John. How the heck do you play it?
Okay, you know, you might wonder,
but tightly summarized.
Tightly summarized indeed. No,
boom.
Not long-winded at all.
No.
Nightfall is a deck-building game from AEG, and you might wonder, you know, why would AEG need another deck-building game? Because they already have Thunderstone.
That confused me.
Yeah. But I think you'll find that this game plays very differently from Thunderstone, and maybe in a good way. So
there's only one direction to go.
Okay. So this game is from AEG, and it's just released, I think, in the last just few days. So as you're hearing this, the game is just now on the market here.
Thank you to Gamesalute.com for our preview copy. We greatly appreciate it.
Yes, we were able to get a nice preview copy of that.
And check them out for all the relevant gaming news you need.
That's right. Much like Dominion, this game is all about deck building and sort of building your forces. But how it's very, very different from Dominion is that the game is all about hurting the other player. You know, whereas Dominion is a game, and I'll just go ahead and say this. I hate to start this review out by making comparisons to Dominion, but it's almost just par for the course with deck building games.
It's the curse of the deck builder.
Yeah, and we're going to get into this in a little bit. We're going to have a little discussion about deck building games, but I'm just going to go ahead and just lay it out there, because I know that you guys who have played deck building games, that's immediately what you're thinking about, is how is it like Dominion and how is it not like Dominion? So it's like Dominion in that you're still building your deck and buying things from the middle of the table and things like that. The way it's not is that this game is all about player interaction, and it's all about hurting the other player. And really the way that you win this game is by the game ends when a particular deck of wound cards runs out. And so during the course of the game, you're going to be inflicting wounds on each player, which puts these wound cards into their deck. Then once the deck runs out, then the game is over. You count up your wound cards, and whoever has the fewest number of wounds is your winner there. So, there's just going to be a lot of brutal card play in this game. The way that you set the game up is very different from, it's a little bit different from Dominion or games like that, in that there's a whole drafting step that goes on. And it's regimented and built into the game, where you're going to be taking certain cards and, much like a booster draft, you're going to hand them out to each player, and they're going to select a card and then pass it to their left, and you'll select another card and pass it to your left. And this is going to determine which cards end up in the piles in the center of the table. But the big twist in this game is that the game also is going to have two stacks of cards in front of you that are considered your private archives. And they're decks of cards that only you will have access to. So that's very different from any other deck building game that I've seen, where you have your own set of things that only you have access to. Now, certain cards may cause other players to mess with you and mess with your private archives, but you're the only one that's going to be able to buy those and put those into your deck. So it gives you some customizability there. So you're going to go through this whole drafting step, and what will eventually happen is that everybody will have two private archives piles, and then there'll be eight piles of cards in the middle of the table. There's a starting deck that everybody gets. It's six cards in duplicate, just sort of six basic cards. You get 12 cards, and you're going to draw up to five cards, and you're going to start the game. The game turn is basically just a series of four steps, and there's combat, chain, claim, and cleanup. So, Dominion is ABC. Nightfall is CCCC. So
it's Spanish.
Very nice.
Thank you.
Okay, so the first thing that you're going
to... Nightfall!
That's enough.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The first thing that you're going to do is the combat phase. And this is not really going to happen in the very first... turn of the game, because you're not going to have any monsters or minions in front of you. But any cards that you have in front of you that are minions that could possibly attack, you have to attack with. That is an interesting part of this game, I think, in that whatever's in front of you has to attack. Think of a game like Magic the Gathering, where you're going to be gathering your forces and trying to attack with things, and you can choose what you're going to attack with. If you have stuff in front of you on the table, it has to attack, and then you choose which opponent you want to attack with. After the combat phase, you're going to resolve all that. Then you're going to have what's called the chain phase. This is the aspect of the game that is very, very different from any other card game that I've really ever seen. And that's the idea that you're going to be building a chain of cards out of your hand. This is how you're playing cards out of your hand. And then other players can build onto that chain, like kind of a stack of cards. Each of the cards in this game has a symbol at the top left. It's a moon symbol, a big moon, and then there's two smaller moons. The big moon is going to be a particular color that determines the color of the card. And then below that are two smaller moons of different colors, and that indicates what color cards can chain to it. So what you'll do is just play a card from your hand. You can do that for free. And then you're going to play another card. You can play as many cards as you want, really, that you can chain. But whatever second card you play, the big moon has to match up with one of the two small moons of the previous card. So you just continue to play in this manner. And then when you're done with your chain, it passes to the next player. And they can choose to chain off of the last card in your chain. They can chain as many cards as they want as they're able to. Then it passes around to the next player. And so it basically gets around to the last player. You're under no obligation to do this. And then after all the cards have been laid out that are going to be chained, then the chain resolves in reverse order.
Last in, first out.
Last in, first out, right? Like a stack. And so all you IT folks out there, yeah. Data structures. And so then you're going to look at each of the card, and each one will have some sort of a chain effect to it. It'll either say chain or it'll say your chain. If it's chain, then even if it wasn't your turn, whatever that chain effect says, that's going to happen. It might get you influence, which we'll talk about in a second. It might deal damage directly to another player. Lots of things that can happen as chain effects. And then once that chain effect resolves, then that card is going to be in play. So this is the way that you get cards onto the table, is through this chain set.
Yeah, we had we tweeted a picture of us playing Nightfall on Twitter, of all places. And we had...
That is where you tweet.
Exactly. We had a listener chime in that he had played it and that the chaining kind of loosely reminded him of Uno. If you think about it, you know, I mean, very, very loosely based, but you know, where you play colors on top of other colors.
Yeah,
yeah.
I see that. Okay.
I think he said the whole game, it felt like a mix between Uno, Magic the Gathering, and like Dominion or Thunderstone or something.
Yeah, yeah. I guess I can kind of,
yeah.
So the chain will resolve in reverse order, and you'll do whatever these things say, and then those cards that you've chained will be in play. And then it comes back around to the last player. If the card says your chain on it, then that's going to be only an effect that will trigger if you were the one who started the chain. After all the chain effects have happened, then you're going to have the claim phase. This is like the buy phase in Dominion, where you can get cards from the middle or from your private archives. The cost of the cards is in influence. And you know, basically, you start off with 2 influence just off the bat. And then you're going to add to that any bonuses that the cards might afford you. And then if you discard cards out of your hand, you get 1 influence for every card that you discard. And that's kind of the currency in the game here. And then you can claim as many cards as you're able to afford. And much like every deck building game, they go into your discard pile. And so that's your claim phase. And then you have your cleanup phase. And this is where you're going to draw cards. And if you have... you know, you can discard as many cards as you want, and then you're going to draw back up to 5 cards. So this game does allow you to keep cards in your hand for multiple turns if you want to. And so then you're going to draw up to 5, and then it'll pretty much go to the next player. So that is the kind of the way that things work here. The combat phase is interesting because each of the cards that are minion cards are going to have a strength value, which is how much damage it inflicts, and then it's going to have some health points on it. And you know, I mentioned in the Rivals of Catan review we talked about earlier, where you are going to rotate the cards to show how many resources you have. Mm-hmm. In this game, it's kind of like that, in that you have a certain number of hit points for your minions, and that's on the top of the card. And then as the card takes damage, you're going to rotate it 90 degrees to show it ticking down number of hit points until it gets to 0, and then the card gets discarded. You know, in the combat phase here, you're basically going to select attackers, which are going to go out to certain players, and then that player can choose to block, or they can choose to take the damage themselves. Much like Magic the Gathering, you know, you can either choose blockers or you can just take the damage. If you take the damage, then you're just going to take that many wound cards, and those will go into your discard pile. And if you choose minions to block, then there's some blocking rules there, and you're going to deal damage to the minions first, and then any leftover damage will go to the player. But that's, you know, the kind of the main thing that happens there. These cards will go in your discard pile, so they're going to get shuffled back in. You might have access to them again. There is a term called exile, which means that you can have cards that will just completely leave the game. And that's another interesting part of the game, is that those initial 12 cards that you have, all of those cards have the same effect on them, in that once they're discarded, they're exiled. So you start off with, you know, the starter deck, but as the game goes on, you're going to be getting rid of those cards, and they won't even be in your deck anymore.
It auto chapels, is I think to coin a Dominion phrase.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's nice because, you know, I liken it as like the training wheels kind of coming off.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like you can't prevent that. So after a while, you better start building your own deck, because that's going to fall away.
Right, right. And knowing when to play those cards and when to discard them, you know, they're going to come off the deck, and you'll have to go with what you've bought from the claim phase.
Yep.
So that's the basics of the game. And, you know, the one other thing about regarding the wound cards, there's 3 different kinds of wound cards: burn, bleed, and something else. Burn and but for the base game, all of the wounds do the same thing, and they have the same effect. Because what you can do during your cleanup phase is you can play a wound card, which will allow you to discard discard all the wounds out of your hand, and then draw up cards. So this, it sort of allows you to refresh your hand. You know, when your hand gets clogged up with wound cards, you can refresh it a little bit. It's not going to decrease the number of wound cards. They'll still be in your deck, but it allows you to have a few more things to play. So that is Nightfall as far as the basic gameplay. As you can see, the overall play is very brutal as far as there's just a lot of attacking and a lot of player interaction, mm-hmm. a lot of direct damage. And the game is not about sitting back and turtling and figuring out what you're going to do. The game will not allow you to do that.
Right.
So that is kind of how it goes there. Cody, what do you think of Nightfall?
It was interesting because I had pretty low expectations, honestly. It's as we're going to mention earlier, you know, I had a little fatigue with deck building games, and honestly, AEG has not really impressed me with much lately, you know,
yeah.
Thunderstone Chief among them, but I was very pleasantly surprised. You know, I thought it represented its theme well, and I thought having all of those different little mechanics thrown together, like you had just a little bit of drafting and a little bit of the, you know, the chaining and the how attacking wasn't so magic-like, it was more timing-based, because since they have to attack on your turn, knowing when to play that character makes a lot of difference. So it was nice, and it didn't stretch on for too long, and I think with experienced players, the game would be a very quick and brutal one.
Very fast.
Yeah, but I was impressed. It was another pleasant surprise, I'd have to say.
Yeah, not Thunderstone. Huh?
No, I mean, that's a pretty low bar.
Yeah, I think that the fact that you can get cards everybody can get cards to the table during that chain phase is one aspect of it that makes this game very interactive and keeps you in the action. You know, mm-hmm. there's no real downtime in this game, because not only are you doing things on your turn, you're going to be possibly doing things on your opponent's turn with those chain cards. So I also think the game probably plays pretty well with multiple players, three or four players. We played a three-player mm-hmm. game, and I think it played fine like that. You know, the chains can be very interesting with multiple players. So,
yeah.
You know, so I like that it kind of keeps you in the game. Plus, the fact that you can put cards into play during the chain phase means that when it's not your turn, you can put blockers into play.
Yep.
And, you know, and so that can be really important too, because, you know, if someone deals you 8 damage, I mean, I didn't mention this. The number of wound cards is 10 times the number of players. So, like in a 3-player game, that's 20 wound cards.
That's 30.
That's 30 wound cards. That's like I said.
Math is hard.
Woo! But, you know, with 30 wound cards, if you're dealing 8 damage, I mean, that's, you know, that's a large portion of the wound cards in the deck there. So you have to be ready to block at the right time. So we do a buy, try, or deny system here. We talk about buy points in the game, try points of the game, and deny points, things that we don't like about it. You know, rather than going into super amounts of detail with that, why don't we just give kind of an overview of, you know, whether we would give it a buy, a try, or a deny, and kind of what we liked or didn't like about it. Are you good with that?
Yeah, I'm good. I'd give it a try, definitely. I mean, it's one you're going to want to get to the table a few times. Even if you're into deck building games, I think you want to see if it's your kind, because one of the neat things about it is it's got some truly innovative mechanics. You know, the chaining system not only allows for strategy between turns, it kind of eliminates the effect that, you know, Dominion and other games have, where it can feel like multiplayer solitaire, you know, where you just have downtime and you're just kind of watching. It's like watching just people shuffle and buy things. There's a lot of interaction there, which is nice. You know, it manages to kind of breathe some fresh air into this this theme. Some things that I wasn't so crazy about: the art of the game is very good and keeping with the theme. I think like the card layout and kind of the design there isn't very good. And the card quality itself is pretty poor.
A little bit thin.
Yeah, I wasn't real impressed. The copy we received, I'm not sure how the retail copies work. It pretty much came in a nice tuck box with room for the inevitable expansions that will come out for it.
And I think that the box that we got is even smaller than the box that the regular okay. game comes in.
Yeah.
So
it
should be plenty of room.
Yeah, it's nice that, and this is something I think Dominion could really take a cue from, is that there's very functional boxes, you know, better than what you'd get in games like Dominion. You see that in you know, the one good thing about Thunderstone Dragonspire was the fact that, you know, they really focused on that organizational aspect and wanted to give you a very functional box that you can use going forward. But for me, like I said, I'd give it a try. I enjoyed it. I'd like to play it again. I think it takes the theme and it really tries to put its mark on the deck building genre. And I'd say as a whole, it succeeds pretty well.
Yeah. I don't even think we mentioned what the theme of the game is. It's kind of inconsequential, I guess, but no. It's supposed to be sort of this world where the sun has gone out or something and it's night all the time. And so all these monsters come out and are sort of fighting for survival. So.
It's very White Wolfy to me. There's werewolves.
Yeah,
vampires,
it's very werewolves, vampires. You know, very, very dark, of course, mm-hmm. being Nightfall. But I really enjoyed this game as well. I just think that the biggest try point in the game would be you got to know that this is a confrontational game.
Right.
And we talked about Puzzle Strike as a chip building game and how that's a very confrontational mm-hmm. game as well. This is sort of the same deal, only more so, I think, in that. You know, you can't go into this thinking, I'm just going to build my little civilization and my little world here. And you know,
you got to come out swinging.
Got to come out swinging. The game forces you to. And if you don't like those kind of games, this is an absolute deny for you then. If you don't like confrontational games, I just don't think you're going to like it at all.
Yeah.
But if you do, and you know, you want to have a little bit of fun with some confrontation and some attacking, if you like things like Magic the Gathering, you're going to like this, I think. Mm-hmm. And, I think that it has that deck-building element, but I don't think that it feels solely like a deck-building game.
Right.
It feels more like a combat game, almost, mm-hmm. than the deck-building part.
If I was going to sum it up, I would say, if you liked Dominion, and you're still looking for that next game, you know, if you didn't like Thunderstone, you didn't like Heroes of Graxa, you didn't like Ascension, whatever, all the other ones, give this one a try, because I think this is... this and Puzzle Strike, I think, are the heirs to the throne, in my opinion.
Wow.
Very, so that's a
bold statement.
I'd say definitely give it a try.
All right. So that's Nightfall from AEG, and that launches nicely into our little discussion on deck building games, shall we?
Let's do it.
So the year was 2008. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was the start of the Game On podcast in 2008, right? And one of our very first episodes that we did a review of a little game called Dominion.
Heard of it?
Hopefully you have. And this is a game that has, I think, really changed and revolutionized a particular segment of the board and card game market. And it, you know, has introduced this mechanic called the deck building game. And, you know, so we just want to talk, since we just talked about Nightfall, we just wanted to talk a little bit about deck building games, what they're all about, for those of you who might not be familiar with them, what has come out and sort of where that genre of games is going. So, Cody, could you tell us kind of what a deck building game is?
Yeah, essentially they all boil down to everyone starts with either exactly the same or a very similar starting deck of cards. And the deck of cards throughout the game is just going to be their machine in which they get bigger and better cards and things that will help them achieve the goal of the game, whether it's buying victory point cards or dealing damage or so on and so forth. And so basically the idea is building the best possible machine, you know, optimizing your play. You know, you could say that about any game, but you're really trying to refine this deck to a nice system or a nice weapon where you can most easily achieve the goals of the game.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that is very different about the game is the idea that there's lots of games where you're getting a tableau of cards or a hand of cards to do certain things, but the idea that whatever you're playing in front of you is going to go into a discard pile that's going to get shuffled back into the deck of cards that you're playing with. So whatever you're playing is going to come back, you know. So it's not like things just go away forever. And knowing the correct mix of cards to know how often you want certain cards to show back up in your hand is sort of the benchmark of this kind of a game. So Dominion, I think, as far as I know, was the first one to do this kind mm-hmm. of thing, and it was a wildly popular game. I actually remember the origins before Dominion came out. They had a copy, it was like a pre-production copy of it that was in like a baseball card long box.
I think I remember too.
And it was just sort of it almost looked like it was construction paper looking cards with just, you know, things written on them. And I remember seeing this being played, and all it was just these piles of cards and people just kind of shuffling them back and forth and everything, but their eyes are wide and they're like, this is so cool, I've never played anything like this before. And it's kind of rare that you see that. Mm-hmm. So So that has sparked so many other games. Well, first of all, it sparked Dominion to come out in multiple formats. So at this point, I think there's probably five expansions or total versions of Dominion that you can get. You know, the point of Dominion as a game is that you are trying to basically create an engine that's going to allow you to purchase victory points that are going to, you know, get you the possible win there. A game like Thunderstone is a game which came out a little bit afterwards. That's probably the second one.
It was the first. It was the first clone, you might say. And it's not a clone. You know, yeah. I hate Thunderstone, but I'll give it props.
Yeah,
yeah. But it was the first kind of deck building game not called Dominion.
Yeah, and that was one, the first one that has like a different purpose other than just get victory points. You know, it laid over the dungeon crawling theme, and then said, you know, you're trying to build up an engine of cards and a deck of cards so that you can go into a dungeon and fight a monster. And you want to have the right mix of weapons and helpers and heroes and stuff like that that are going to be able to fight these monsters, which will get you the victory points at the end of the game. So you know, it's been a new mechanic. You know, the Dominion won the Spiel des Jahres the year after it came out there. So that was kind of a benchmark thing as well, that a game of that nature, a card game even, would win that particular prize. I guess, as games have come out since Ascension, Chronicle of the Godslayer is one that's come out recently. There's one called Arctic Scavengers, which has come out. Heroes of Graxia. We just talked about Nightfall.
Arcana.
And there's other ones that are coming out. And there's Rune Age, which is a new one that's set in the Terranoth world that Fantasy Flight is coming out with. I believe they're coming out with also one called Blood Bowl Team Manager, which is about building a football team, again, with the same sort of mechanic. So, Cody, what do you think about these games as far as their place in? Is it a fad? Is it something that, you know, we really think is going to be around in 10, 15, 20 years? It's so easy for fads to kind of rise up in games and then fall away.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know my gaming history well enough to know if this is completely true, but it seems like I've never seen a mechanic catch fire like that so quickly and produce so many spinoffs.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure that, yeah, there's worker placement games and, you know, then other ones come out, but it just seems like every month there's a new deck building game. I think it's kind of faddish. I do think, yes, they'll be around in 10, 15 years, but one or two of them will. I think the cream will rise to the top.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I still think there's one on the horizon. You know, Dominion was the first and it's still a good game. And it spawned kind of all these different ones. And some of them are pretty good, like Puzzle Strike, Nightfall. Some of them are bad, Thunderstone, Heroes of Graxia. And there's a lot of stuff in between. But I still think there's going to be that one deck-building game that kind of hits and improves on the things that Dominion and all these games have laid down and really makes a mark. And then I think you'll just see games like that, Dominion, maybe one or two others, that's what'll be around and still being played in 10 years.
Yeah, I think that's probably true too. And you sort of think about that in terms of other mechanics. I think that's sort of the case too, is that, you know, you've got your quintessential worker placement games and your quintessential set collection games and that kind of stuff. So, looking for the next Dominion, you know, have we seen the next Dominion yet? You know, have we seen the one that's going to surpass Dominion? I don't think we have.
No, that's the one I'm still waiting on, you know, the deck building messiah, as it were. You know, yeah. It's like I think
deck building messiah.
You know, it's, you know, there have been some really good ones, but I don't think the one is here yet.
Yeah, you know, because it seems like the beginning of Dominion is, well, the whole point of Dominion is the deck building is the point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's nothing else going on in the game other than building the deck.
Right.
And it seems like the way that it's branched out is that we've gone from just building the deck to now you're building the deck and you're trying to do something more than just getting points, but you have some kind of a goal in mind. And I think I've read right, I think that Rune Age is a cooperative deck building game.
I'm not sure. I know that they're at least going to have like characters.
Okay.
And you know, it's like each person will be a little different. I get what you're saying, to where, you know, Dominion was just building the deck, and then starting with Thunderstone, you had build the deck to do X purpose.
Right.
But would you agree that most of those purposes have felt clunky, you know, with the deck building?
Yeah.
I mean, well, to a point.
Thunderstone definitely, I think, has felt clunky because it's...
But I mean, all of them, it still seems a little... There's not that very natural flow into it yet.
Yeah.
You know, some games do it better than others. That's where I think that deck building game that's yet to be announced or whatever. I think the first one that seamlessly marries the deck building with whatever, you know, action they decide to put with it, I think that's going to be your big winner.
Yeah. Well, and I think that that's the problem is the term deck building game. It's like, I don't really necessarily like the fact that it's a whole class of games, you know.
Yeah.
It's like the deck building part of a game is interesting, you know, that's just something that's part of the mechanics of a game, but that you have other things that are going on, you know. Mm-hmm. I have yet to see a deck building mechanic that's been incorporated into a board game. Yeah, unless you call Ascension a board game because it's got a board, but yeah. You know, it's basically just a place to keep stuff. But you know, if you had an actual board game with actual board game goals and things going on, but that you're using that deck building engine to help to drive that forward. I mean, I think that's what I'm looking for. I'm ready for the deck building mechanic to fade into the background a little bit, you know? And for that not to be, you know, oh my gosh, deck building, it's so cool, you know. But it is cool, but you know, can we just include that as a mechanic to go along with other things?
Yeah, I know. With me and with several other folks, there's a definite fatigue. You know, like when we got Nightfall to the table. I try to be very objective. It started out a little in the negative just because, oh, another deck building game. And I think back to your Thunderstones and your Heroes of Graxia and all that. And I'm just, okay, you know. But, you know, it surpassed my expectations. It was a good game, like we mentioned. But, you know, like you said, the mechanic needs to kind of fall by the wayside. You know, it's like Seven Wonders. It's just a drafting game.
Yeah.
But we rarely just say, yeah, it's just a drafting game.
Yeah.
It's just a big draft, you know. No, it's a civilization building game that uses a drafting game, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
You know, it's like with deck building games, you're like, yeah, it's deck building with vampires, deck building with dragons, you know.
Well, and here's the danger of it, I think, is because the reason why I liked Dominion is because I like games like Magic the Gathering. All those collectible card games, mm-hmm. I like most of those. I mean, if I sit down and play a game of it, I like it. But I hate the deck building part of it.
Yeah.
Because I'm bad at it. I mean, I'm really bad at, you know, creating that perfect Magic deck and then going to Friday Night Magic and playing it. I've just never been able to, in my mind, make those kind of connections to put the cards together. And so what I loved about Dominion was it gave you a chance to do that as the game, and it's fast.
And you had a limited number of things to pick
from. Yes, and then once the game is over, if you were terrible at building that particular kind of deck, you can set it up and go again, you know. But like with Magic, if you build a bad deck and then you lose a bunch of games with it, well, then you got to go back and pull out all your cards and get out a chart and figure out what you want to put together, and it's a pain in the butt. So I loved that about Dominion. That's why, I mean, currently it still sits at the top as my number one favorite game, Dominion. And we'll see how it goes towards the end of the year. I played some interesting games this year. But I think the danger, though, is that you take the simplicity of something like a Dominion and you start saying, okay, now it's deck building and you're using it to fight in a dungeon. Or now it's deck building and you're trying to kill other people, like in Nightfall, you know. But there's this chain thing, so there's an additional complexity there. So you have to know when to play your cards because you're not sure if you want to play them in your chain or if you want to play. What do you want to buy? Because do you want to buy something? And it adds complexity. And to me, eventually you'll get to the point where the complexity of a deck building game is just as complex as building a deck for Magic. And mm-hmm. then I'm not going to want to play them anymore.
Right.
Because, you know, I really want that to be an easygoing thing where it's just, where it's almost kind of a light thing. You know, there's a little bit of strategy, but there's a lot of luck involved in that kind of a deck building. You know, statistical luck, I guess, you know. Yeah. If I buy a particular card, what's the likelihood it's going to come back up and, you know, that I can use it. But if it ever gets to that level of complexity, I'm just not going to be interested anymore.
Yes, and see, I think this deck building game that's on the horizon that we keep talking about, I think the first one that
manages... Deck building game to be named later.
That's right. I think the first one that manages to, you know, like I said, seamlessly mix the deck building part and the activity part, the one that manages to kind of, I guess, hide the deck building part, I guess not use Dominion as a base, because so many of these games you see, whether completely blatant, like Puzzle Strike, or a little more hidden, but you still see something like Nightfall.
Yeah.
You know, the first one to really turn it on its ear to where it's still deck building, but it doesn't feel like deck building, you know?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, so the first one where it seems like, oh, I see, they took Dominion and changed X, Y, and Z, and that's how they got here. Yeah. First one that can hide that and really marry the deck building, the activity, will be your winner.
Because I think that's... I'm trying to think if there's any kind of a mechanic that you think of. I mean, the dicing for resources mechanic that's in...
Catan.
Well, no, I mean more like dice placement. Like Alien Frontiers, uh-huh. Kingsburg. I've heard Kingsburg used a lot as a, you know, this game is like Kingsburg.
Yes.
You know, so that's almost another one that it created this sort of new idea of you're placing the dice on the board to get the certain resources, and there's a competition mm-hmm. for that. You know, then Alien Frontiers, you know, Kingsburg in Space, as they call that, you know, even though it's more than that. But, you know, with Dominion, all these deck building games, everyone I've ever reviewed on this show and everyone I've ever talked about, it's always, okay, so have you played Dominion? Yeah, okay. So this is like Dominion, and you start making those connections.
Right. Yeah, it takes it a step further than Kingsburg, because you say, like, oh, this is equivalent to money, this is equivalent to actions. And then that's why when we got that email a few episodes back where the guy had bought Puzzle Strike, you know, for him and his girlfriend, and neither of them had played Dominion, you mm-hmm. know, that blew our minds.
Yeah.
Just because, like, well, how do you teach it? You know, that would be hard to teach, I would think. And
right.
that's what made it so
And he said
so
it was
weird.
Hard in the rule book to kind of get it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because if you know, you've never experienced something like that, mm-hmm. you know, a game that's so obviously based on Dominion at the core, that's crazy.
But yeah, I think that you can sort of see that a lot of these games that have come out, because of the fact that there's such a close link to Dominion, you can just tell us that they were just sitting around the table going, Dominion's a great game, you know. Man, how can we capitalize on Dominion? Well, let's see what we can do to tweak it, you know. And you can't end up coming out with a spray painted version of Dominion, you know,
yep.
and that's not innovation in game design.
No.
You know, that's
trying to make a buck.
That's just trying to make a buck, you know. That's
which I mean is the bottom line at the end of the day for the game companies.
Absolutely,
but,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like Gen Con last year, you know, you had, you know, Thunderstone was out by that time.
Yeah.
But I think they had a few expansions. That one, again, not to completely bash on Thunderstone for another episode, but that one seems like it was really rushed out. It had so much errata, and a lot of that's just AEG. But,
sure.
you know, that one looked like they pushed that thing out the door. They're like, okay, get it out there. But Gen Con last year, you had, you know, Thunderstone expansions. You had Heroes of Graxa. You had Ascension. Those are the three ones that I remember just getting a lot of buzz. And
yeah.
I don't think you're going to hear anything out of like Heroes of Graxia. I think Ascension has small pockets of,
yeah.
you know, but
in a way it's very similar to CCGs. I still have my starter set for the 24 television show CCG that came out, you know, 5 years
yep.
ago or something like that. You know, every single Gen Con, there's a set of collectible card games that come out that you know, oh, that's interesting. And then you know, you won't
yeah.
see them the next year. You know, there's even been like collectible miniatures games, Wizards of the Coast put out, you know, Axis and Allies miniatures, Dreamblade, D&D miniatures, and all that stuff has kind of gone by the wayside too. And I think that this is sort of the wave we're riding right now is in with deck building games. And you know, I think that it's, you know, like you said, when you get to the point where something is it feels different, you know, yeah, it's deck building, but it just feels like
mm-hmm.
it's something new. Then I think that's what's really going to stick. These other things just become also rans and.
I would say that the only other thing would be if someone comes out with, you know, the next deck building game, where it's not deck building, but this mechanic that, like, you know, the first time we all played Dominion, or most of us, I know some people don't like it, but it was just kind of like, whoa, you know, this is definitely new.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's not been anything like that since deck building because all these kind of clones have been pushed out the door. You know, I think that next mechanic, whatever it is, I think when that comes out and people are like, oh, I think then you'll see deck building kind of start to slow down as people start making copies of whatever the next
because
mechanic is.
I'll bring it back around to the Jones theory, you know.
As everything should come around.
the whole idea of when you go to a convention, you see something like someone trying to pitch you a game and say, well, if you like Dominion, then you'll like this, you know. Well, the truth is if you like Dominion, play Dominion,
mm-hmm.
you know, play Dominion, unless you're going to like this game better, which is probably not going to be the case. And so, you know, you've got to make your choice. What deck building game are you going to want to play? You know, Puzzle Strike's kind of on the border for me because
it's close.
Cause that's when I own both of those games and I'm just not, it feels different enough to me to be different.
feels different.
Yeah. It's true, yeah. But just the goal of the game and the way that you're, you know, the way it feels kind of like a video game. That's the closest one for me to being different from Dominion. So, anyway, just to kind of wrap things up, I'd love to hear your opinion on deck building games. I'm sure that we've gotten lots of tweets on our Twitter feed and some of the posts on our Facebook account, our Facebook page about this topic. So, you know, what are your favorite deck building games? How do you feel about this particular mechanic? Do you think is it something that's here to stay, or is it a flash in the pan sort of a thing? So, you know, we'll follow up on this discussion next episode, and you know, we'll just keep waiting for that magical next mechanic, right?
Yep.
That's going to come and sweep us all off of our feet. So feel free to write us at the Game On Inbox.
At gameoninbox@gmail.com.
Thank you, Cody. Or send us a voicemail at 4138.
Game on.
It's time for a Game On bonus review. Bonus review. Bonus review. Bonus review.
Whoa, hey.
I haven't heard that in a while, have we?
I've forgotten about that. That's right. We have a bonus review for you. You've made it this far, and we're going to review Dominion. No, I'm just kidding. We're going to be reviewing a reprint of a classic game, Survive Escape from Atlantis, brought to you by Stronghold Games.
No deck building involved at all in this game. Yeah. This is from our friends at Stronghold Games. You know, you might remember a few episodes back we interviewed Stephen Bonacore, had him on the show talking about some of the great games he was coming out with. And one of the ones he talked about was Survive. And this game originally came out in the early 80s.
82, I think.
I think so, yeah. And it's like a Milton Bradley or Parker Brothers kind of a game. And, you know, the idea is that you're on... And I think they sort of not fully rethemed it, but they've made it a little bit different as to what's, you know, what you're
going to be doing. They punched it up quite a bit.
They did, yeah. And what you're going to find in this game are some of the best components and prettiest components that are out there right now, I think. Some of the most vibrant colors, and it's just a great game to have visually. But the game is all about trying to escape an island. And so the island of Atlantis is sinking, and you're trying to get your little meeples from the sinking island onto the safe islands that are on the corners of the board. And everybody gets a certain number of meeples. I think it's like 10 or something like that. And on the underside of those meeples, you have numbers. And that's going to be the points that you'll get at the end of the game. So during the whole game, you're going to be trying to get your meeples onto the land. And then at the end of the game, once the island finally sinks, there's a tile at the very end that's like a volcano that signals the end of the game. Everything that's on the board dies. And then the stuff that's on your safe islands, you turn over the meeples and you count the points. And whoever has the most points is the winner. So this really falls into the category, wouldn't you say, Cody, of a light family game?
Yeah, and I think you mentioned this, I want to say it was last episode, but it's got that family take that aspect to it. You know, you could see the 80s game box where, you know, dad and who was Uncle someone?
I don't know.
I don't know. Cousin
Uncle
Ted
Frank or something.
I don't know. But yeah, it's very much a gotcha take that, you know, think Sorry but fun.
Yeah.
You know, with with cool boats and meeples, and it can get really cutthroat, I think, if you have a bunch of gamers playing.
Yeah, yeah. So the island itself is comprised of tiles that you're going to lay out at the beginning. And this is unlike anything I've seen in a game before, in that you have tiles that are of different thicknesses. So you have beach tiles, which are real thin, forest tiles, which are kind of a little bit thicker, and then the mountain tiles, which are giant chunky cardboard, like, you know, really chunky, chunkier than any chits or boards that
I'm trying to think how thick it is. I mean, it's
like double the thickness of a board, I think, of like a game board. It's that thick.
It's really, you'll definitely pick it up and look at it the first time you play. Yeah, I know, I'm like, goodness.
Jeez, that's huge. And so it gives this nice sort of 3D look to the board when you set it up.
It looks great set up.
And you randomly set these out under this area that's been sort of cordoned off on the board. And then you're going to have little wooden meeples that represent sea serpents.
Sea animals. You got whales and dolphins.
Well, yeah. But at the beginning of the game, you just have the sea serpents on the board.
Sorry.
And you have one that's right next to each of the islands. And these are the big purple-looking Loch Ness monster things. And then one that's in the very middle. And as the game goes on, you know, on your turn, it's going to be real easy because you start the game off with all of your meeples on the board. You're going to be going around one at a time, placing your meeples on the different parts of the board. And then there's these cute little wooden boats.
The boats are the best part.
Yeah, and the boats are going to hold up to three meeples, and you'll everybody places two boats around on the island. And so, you know, once the game starts, what you're going to do on your turn is you have three movement points, which will allow you to move around the island or move onto a boat. Or if you're in the water, you can swim, but you can only swim one space. Each meeple can only swim one space. And you'll spend those three movement points, and then you're going to take a tile. And you have to start off with the beach tiles, because that's what would sink first. And then once those are all gone, you would pick a forest tile and so on. And you'll take one of those tiles, and then you'll look at the back of it and see what it does. Now, some of these tiles on the back of them will have effects that you can play later on your on a future turn. So you'll kind of keep them face down just as like a card, like a hand of cards. But some of them will have an arrow on them that says, this happens right now. And it'll be things like, oh, you know, there happened to be a shark in that space. And so you have like, so you have little shark tokens, you have whale tokens, and then you have the sea serpent tokens. And so, and all of these different monsters kind of act in different ways. So, for example, the sea serpents, they're all about eating people and eating manned boats.
That's in their portfolio.
That's what they do. And so if they ever end up in a space with a swimmer or a manned boat, they're going to eat it. The whales are interested in sinking boats. So if they come across a manned boat, they're going to sink the boat, and then your little guys become swimmers.
Sounds like a dating profile for creatures of the sea. Like the whales are looking to sink boats.
Like long strolls on the beach and sinking boats. And then you have your sharks, which are interested in eating swimmers, but they're not really going to mess with manned boats. So there are these three monsters that you're sort of dealing with, three animals, and they all are looking for different things. Now, after you've taken your tile and done whatever the tile says, then you're going to roll a die, which is going to be your monster die, and you're going to move a monster of whatever type comes up, and there's some movement rules as to how much they can move. So this is the part of the game especially where you're going to be screwing with your neighbors and your friends there, that, you know, you're going to be sending the sea serpents after them or getting them away from you, and, you know, so that's kind of the fun take that in the game. I play this game with my kids, and this is the most fun where, you know, they, in the context of the game, they can really go after daddy. Mm-hmm. And so my little 4-year-old girl is, you know, she rolls up the shark and she looks on the board and she finds the shark and she's like, oh, there's one of daddy's meeples. Ha ha. You know, and it's just hilarious because they just have so much fun with that. And, you know, and I play it up quite a bit and say, hey, why did you do that? And they just cackle laughter. Mm-hmm. It's really fun. So the game just progresses just like that until finally you get to that last tile, mountain tile that has a volcano on it. So once you get to the mountain phase, the game could end at any time because right. It ends immediately. And then, you know, that's basically it. There's a couple other little movement rules, but I mean, it's real easy. It's once you've learned it once, you're never going to have to look at the rule book again. Mm-hmm. And so Cody, buy points, try points, deny points for survive.
Well, the components, like John mentioned, are fantastic. This is a game, once it's set up, even at conventions with just, you know, hardcore board gamers, this will always get a look because it's a gorgeous game set up. And, mm-hmm. you know, the very thick tiles denoting the different parts of the island, very cool, and all the meeples. Really good stuff. I would say, to sum it up, it's a great family game. I would say almost a requirement in the new family game library.
I agree.
Instead of Sorry, get this. But the kicker is you can play it with your gaming group and have just as much of a good time.
Yeah.
It's something you can take to the family reunion with a bunch of non-gamers. And you can play it with your gaming group, and you can still have a blast in both arenas, and I think that says a lot. So I really enjoyed it. I want to play it again.
Yeah. I mean, I have almost all buy points for this one. I don't think I have anything even in the... much like I said with Nightfall, if you don't like confrontational games at all...
Yeah.
You know, that
if
might,
your family's going to get upset, then...
Yeah, you know, there's going to start fights or something, then don't do that. Although I will say that... I would have originally said that you need to play this game confrontationally, that's the way that you're going to win. But I played this at HoosierCon with Kalen and with Jesse Hickel and his wife Sarah Ellen. And Sarah Ellen does not like confrontational games. And so the entire time, whenever she had to move a monster, she would just move it away from everybody.
Hmm.
And I'm like, well, you know, you could go in there and you know, kill Jesse's swimmer. And she's like, oh, no, I don't want to do that. So I'm kind of rolling my eyes going, oh, come on, this is not the way to play this game. She won.
Yeah.
Of course. And so, you know.
See,
you
no one's targeting her.
That's right. Yeah.
She's so, everybody's friend.
That's the thing, is that we were all killing each other, and she was just, you know, no one was targeting her. So
she probably knew more than everyone at that table.
Probably there, so, yeah. Yeah. So you can play that, you know, play that style too, and that'll work. So big props for Stronghold Games and for Survive. You know, if you have a chance, especially if you've got a family with kids, it just plays really, really well with kids. But also, like Cody said, you play with your gamer group, especially if you've known each other for a while and you like to sort of rib each other and do some gotcha there. Survive's a great, great game. So go get it.
All right, well, that wraps up another rainy episode of Game On. We got quite a tempest brewing outside.
Yeah, Cody's in a good mood because he loves the rain.
I need to just move to Seattle. Yep. But we hope you'll join us in 2 weeks, where we're going to have a bevy of gaming goodness.
Oh, yes. So much stuff that we... we can't even tell you about it.
That's right. It's double secret.
That's right. But until that time, we want to tell you about some ways you can get in touch with us. Actually, you know, Wayne's going to tell you about all those.
Yeah, what do we
ways.
Pay him for? Yeah.
we don't pay him at all.
That's
unfortunately.
Right. We're going to double his salary.
We want to let you know, though, that we do have the donation button on our website. One of the best ways that you can support our show is by using that button, and it'll be like a PayPal donation. We do appreciate all the support that you've given us. We appreciate all the new listeners that we've seen recently, just from like our Dice Tower appearance. Mm-hmm. I think we've seen some new listeners there. And welcome to any folks who specifically downloaded the interview with Jeremy Salinas. I know yeah. that we probably have some new listeners from that. So
welcome aboard.
Welcome to Game On. But yeah, until next time.
Game On.
This episode of Game On is sponsored by Myriad Games, on behalf of friendly professional game stores everywhere. If you'd like to contact Cody and John, send them an email at gameoninbox@gmail.com or leave a voicemail at 413-8-GAME-ON. For more content, check out our website at gameonpodcast.com. Join our guild on boardgamegeek.com and connect with other fans of the show. Become a fan of our show on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Game On Podcast. Game On with Cody and John is a proud member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network. Check out other great shows on pulpgamer.com. Thanks for listening, and until next time, Game On.
All right, it's time for the Game On inbox, but before we get into your emails, we want to do our...
What?
Oh, sorry, you gave me a weird look.
I didn't give you a weird look.
You gave me a weird look.
Whatever.
No, let's try it again. Well, it's time for the Game On inbox, but before we get to your emails, we want to give our due penance to our friend, Myriad Dan at Myriad Games.
I know you... What? You keep looking at me. I'm not looking at you.
You were saying something.
Okay.
You said something. I don't interrupt people. I was letting you say your bit.
Okay.
Myriad Games sponsors Game On with Cody on... See, you threw me off.
Whatever.
Oh my gosh, you got me infected with the Johns.
It's about time.
Did it, derp, derp.